Welcome back to the Hockey House Podcast, episode 134, presented by Optimex Sports. I'm your host and executive producer, David Herman, as we bring you all the latest news from around the ACHA and AAU college hockey. A couple of notable absences tonight. Murph is unable to join, same with Fitzy as well, so I am joined by my co-host, Aiden Collins. Collins, how's it going as you're wrapping up the end of the college life?
It's been busy. It's a lot of work. They tell you your senior spring is supposed to be fun, and right now I'm not having any fun this week. We're going to get over the hump on Friday, and then we'll be able to, you know, enjoy it a little bit more. You know, wrapping up the senior capstones, job interviews, all that fun stuff. A lot of long nights in the library this week, so it's been good. I'm excited to get this over with and get out into the real world.
Good stuff. We kind of came to a very abrupt stop here in Utica now that the season is over for both the Comets and UCFC. No pressing distractions during the day that come with being the social media manager for two teams, plus a significantly lighter workload at the moment, which I'm enjoying until it will eventually start to pick up again relatively soon as we pivot over into restaurant season and then box lacrosse season. Let's talk about the lead this week. The first head coach in HBCU, that's historically Black college and university history, Dante Abercrombie at Tennessee State University. He will lead the Tigers and HBCU hockey into a new era. He comes with stops around Maryland, around NCAA D3, and then professional experience as well. He was coaching with the Toronto Marlies, Newfoundland Growlers, and the Maple Leafs, all as development coaches, and then was coaching with Stevenson University at the NCAA D3 level as an assistant coach. And you kind of know you're a big deal when you've got the Toronto Maple Leafs official account commenting on your hiring post. That shows you how much impact he made in and around the organization. Collins, you're a Maryland guy. As you look through some of the stops that he made, what can you tell us about his hockey pedigree?
Georgetown Prep, one of my high school's rivals. It's the Battle of the Blue. They're a great team. Little Caps, AAA, great program as well. Stevenson, I've been practicing at their rink my entire life. I mean, this is quite the resume here. Of just some top tier Maryland prep, you know, youth hockey, college hockey, and obviously NHL. And I remember when we were talking with the Tennessee State athletic director, and he was talking with us, and, you know, he said when they got that head coach, they were going to go out with a bang. And boy, did they go out with a bang. They went and got their guy. And I am really excited to see this program grow and see more and more commitments start to come in.
It's been really exciting to see not only how the Nashville community has embraced Tennessee State, but the HBCU community. As a whole. I wasn't sure if there'd potentially be kind of a standoffish approach to hockey kind of joining the HBCU sports ranks, but that hasn't happened. It's been really, really cool to see near universal support on that. I will say that I had the opportunity to meet Dante recently during the Utica Stevenson UCHC championship game. I was on the ice photographing Utica's win, and I happened to look over to my left, and I did a little bit of a double take because I saw Cole Bell, who was the head coach at the time at Ohio University as I was finishing up my time there. After all the celebrations were done, I very quietly walked my way over to Stevenson's side of the building and asked if I could talk to Cole Bell real quick, caught up with him, and Dante happened to be coming out of the locker room, introduced myself. Small world in this hockey community of, as I explained kind of what we were doing with the Hockey House, and it was really cool to know that now he's kind of going to be under our banner, at least for a year, while they get themselves situated to build a big program. Speaking of head coaches, let's take it over to Michigan, where Aquinas announced their new head coach, Brandon Rosema. And this announcement comes on the heels of Rosema's all-time great career coming to a close this past season. 5 years with Aquinas, starting at the ACHA M2 level before making the jump to the M1 level. Really tore it up over his time, wore the C for 2 years, wore the A for one. It's awesome to see them go with someone who knows Aquinas in and out, and maybe can take Aquinas up into that top 30 sort of ranking. I think if he winds up putting on a little bit of a show for us this season, it'd be a really great perspective to have someone who's so recently out of the ACHA and now is behind the bench coaching.
Yeah, it's definitely always interesting to see players immediately graduate, come back in as coaching staff, because you have that sense of familiarity, kind of keeps things loose and is not so uptight with the guys, which is, I think, a really, really great for team environment. And like you mentioned, hopefully if they do well, we can get them on the pod.
One of the big movements this week, Niagara's departure from the Eastern States Collegiate Hockey League, the ESHL, to move to independent status. Niagara has really cemented themselves with a strong program, a high-class schedule, and you're going to hear from Tom shortly about his thoughts on the whole move.
What's up, Hockey House Pod listeners? This is Tom Moridian, head coach of Niagara University's ACHA M1 program here. I wanted to say thank you to executive producer David Herman and, of course, founder Mackenzie Murphy for giving me the opportunity to come on this week's episode to formally announce that the 2024-2025 season will be Niagara's first as an independent team at the Division I level. Before we get into the buildup that ultimately led to that decision, I think we would be doing a disservice to the Eastern States Collegiate Hockey League if we didn't take a moment to properly thank their leadership core, their coaches, and most importantly, their players, not only for allowing us to refine our process, but for the incredibly competitive conference schedule over the last 2 years. You heard it here first, folks. Don't sleep on the ESCHL. I think everyone's going to see just how strong they are as next season slowly starts to open up. Transitioning into what the future looks like for us. The times are very exciting, but they're much more risk-heavy than they've ever been. This will be the first time our team's ever gone without competing for an auto bid to the national tournament or without any specific game count guarantee whatsoever. From a program perspective, it's always been our goal to amplify the student-athlete experience here at Niagara, and I feel like we've been fortunate to have been put in a position to do that with this transition. But I think it's important to note that the geographics and how we really get into effectively allocating our budget, specifically referencing how we travel, was really the major push behind it all. I think it's also important to note that we want to continue playing every team in the ESCHL. But when we started crunching the numbers collectively as a staff, we started to understand that the benefits of trimming and trading specific interconference trips for out-of-conference opponents that will reduce the hit on our bottom line, expose our players to high-ranked ACHA and NCAA foes week after week, but also putting ourselves in a position to come out of those scenarios as better hockey players, coaches, people, etc. I'm going to give you guys a couple examples. Trips to Drexel, Rhode Island, and Delaware, they're awesome. They're fun. But they're all within excess of 7 hours from Niagara. But the trips to Adrian and Ohio, let's use Indiana Tech, for example, because we're going to be playing them for 2 games at home this year and 2 games on the road next year. They're all 6 hours or less. Also, we have a fair amount of local NCAA teams that are within about 20 minutes to an hour and a half or so, and they've expressed an incredible amount of interest in setting up annual bouts and warm-up games for them now that we have the scheduling flexibility to do so. So we will be able to add between 2 and 4 NCAA opponents year after year to our schedule, which is awesome. Just to touch on what this sort of scheduling format will mean to our players, specifically the guys who have been here for about 3 to 4 years and have helped build Niagara's reputation into being a considerably desirable place to play and hopefully one of the stronger teams in the league as the years progress. I think about guys like Austin Robinson, Connor Loft, Quinn Schneidmiller, and Tristan Taillefer. Those four players were on the team when we played, I don't know, 1 to 2 high-ranked opponents in a full season, and we scratched and clawed to fill a weekend series with any willing opponent, home or away. To give them the ability to play teams like Liberty, Ohio, Pittsburgh for 4-game sets, and as well as Maryville and Adrian for 2-game sets, also a chance to potentially prove in the NCAA setting that they belong, it means everything to me personally as a coach. It's a way to say thank you, I think, for all that they've done while wearing the color purple, and for truly building a family legacy here, which is what our program's always been about. In a nutshell, we're really just hoping that the exposure to the teams we'll be playing night in and night out will help us all become better for the sake of our hockey team's present and future. I think most coaches will probably echo the sentiment that I'm about to talk about next. The residual trickle-down of playing in situations like this definitely impacts your team positively in practice that week, the workouts that week, and their overall mental composure heading into that week's game prep. Or we could be wrong, and I'll have to eat that one. As usual, guys, thanks for the annual invite to the pod. Looking forward to talking all things ACHA as we gear up for next year. Good luck to all the players, the coaches, the managers, the program builders, the student interns, the reps, everybody that works their tail off to make their programs tick. Hopefully you guys have a great 2024-2025, and hopefully we'll be lucky enough to see you guys at the national tournament. Have a good one.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate you chiming in on it. Let's pivot over to an exciting showcase event with the JOG Chicago College Prospect Showcase. That's going to be from April 26th to April 28th at the Fifth Third Arena. There is a whole host of really, really quality universities and coaches that are going to be at this event. Let's take it over to Collins's territory now with George Mason. George Mason came in hot with a really solid video of their brand new locker room. This thing looks like it is straight out of the NCAA D1. I was beyond impressed with what the construction company was capable of pulling off, and I think it's going to do wonders for revamping the image that George Mason is trying to put together. I know, Collins, you were talking about how George Mason was a little bit of a deeper team this year, and I think they surprised some people with their play. What do you think this is going to do for their program moving forward?
They're a program on the up. You know, I'd be interested to see how this changes recruiting. This has been a project that's been in the works now for probably, I think, 2 years. I remember that's when we saw the first plans of the locker room and we posted that. And it's nice to see that it's finally done. Gorgeous locker room. Unfortunately, Villanova, we still own their barn. They haven't beat us in their own barn at all. Just some friendly poking. I'm not the one who has to deal with it anymore, so I can say whatever I want. You know, I'm glad to see they're on the up and up. So
George Mason's a school that, if you're not familiar, kind of made the jump from ACHA M3 up to ACHA 1. Kind of struggled a little bit out of their gate in their opening 21-22 season with a losing record, 522-23. But now in a pretty stunning rebuild, had a 21-6 record last year. So very, very impressive, and maybe a model that some of these schools in Michigan making the jump from M3 up to M1 are looking to emulate in terms of building a program and building a legacy. So good for George Mason getting that done. Let's focus on some pressing NHL news. I feel like it's the talk of everybody who is watching, engaging with hockey right now. It's the new Utah NHL team after the disaster in the desert with the Coyotes and that whole Glendale situation, the land auction, everything that went into that. Salt Lake City is getting their own team. And boy, was the reception great for them tonight, not only at the airport hangar, but at the Delta Center. It is going to be electric to see some hockey in Salt Lake City. But there's already hockey in Salt Lake City with the University of Utah, both their M1 and Women's 1 programs. I'm hoping to see some direct investment from the team, whatever their name is, and we'll get to that a little bit later with our question of the week. Maybe spearheading a jump to the NCAA D1. If Atlanta comes in, it feels like they're eyeing Georgia to do the same thing, to really turn it into a whole hockey city. I think it's going to be awesome that more and more people are going to be aware of even more hockey in Utah outside of just the new NHL team. And speaking of great hockey teams in Utah, you've got Weber State and Utah Valley both within an hour away. It'll be awesome to see that impact that as well.
I'm really stoked about this. I mean, I think it would be great to see the Utes join NCAA D1 along with Arizona State in what would have been the Pac-12, which is now Big 12 hockey. I don't know. I'm excited to see where this goes. This is a really, really, really big opportunity, 100%. I mean, we saw it with the success of the Golden Knights and now the success of UNLV. So hopefully we see some sort of partnership there, maybe some investment from these NHL teams into ACHA.
Even though Nationals might have come and gone, it wasn't all done with on-ice action. The College Hockey South was victorious in the AAU All-Star Challenge with a really, really sick graphic, by the way. Awesome to see all of the player cutouts and individual university representation tagging all of the guys, all of the teams. They just knock it out of the park when it comes to social coverage. I was so impressed with College Hockey South this whole year. I know Murph's often the one saying it, but from a social media standpoint, they continue to elevate the bar and really, really impress me with that. Staying with College Hockey South, Alabama women's hockey had some major coaching additions. As a comment from friend of the pod, Savannah Prefontaine, they brought in two elite coaches that are going to take this program to the moon. New head coach Kevin Davis is a Bama ACHA M3 alum who worked for Total Hockey Academy, and assistant coach Anya Laxton played NCAA D3 at Becker and Worcester State. state. Women's hockey continues to grow in the South. Very, very excited to see them grow. Staying with women's hockey, we saw the addition of two new teams this week, that being with Army. They had an exhibition game versus Navy over the weekend, and the midshipmen got the 5-1 win over the cadets. But there were some adorable pictures of the Army team talking to the Navy Youth Hockey Girls program. And then Illinois is adding another team to the Big Pond. They'll play at the women's 2 level in the CCHWA with Sioux, Adrian, Northern Michigan, Central Michigan, and more. It's really a power conference at that point. So excited to see some more hockey out of Illinois. Some stick taps this week. Firstly, to Brendan Pepe, the longtime Stony Brook Seawolf, now with the Roanoke Railyard Dogs, elite team name, by the way. He was recently named the SPHL Defenseman of the Year. In his second year with Roanoke, Pepe appeared in all 56 games and finished the season with 13 goals, 41 points, and a plus 24 rating as a defenseman. He finished his career at Stony Brook with 106 points before signing his first pro contract with the Danbury Hattricks in 2022. He was always a pleasure to watch when I made a couple of pilgrimages to the rinks and saw him play against Syracuse at Tennedy. Always, always a fun guy to watch on the ice. Big, big weekend for Purdue Northwest. They won Most Spirited Team at the Leo Awards, which I guess is their version of like a club sports awards. And Young Gravy wore the Pride's jersey on stage. So awesome weekend to be Purdue Northwest. And friend of the program, Jess Lott, wrapped up her time with Pitt Hockey. She sent us a really, really kind and heartfelt message saying, "It was so great meeting you all in St. Louis, seeing how much Hockey House has grown since you had Pitt on way back on episode 47. Insane to think about, by the way, that it's been that long. It's crazy. Our program wouldn't have all the eyes on it that it does now without everything you guys do to promote club hockey. After 2 years doing this postgrad and from 5 hours away from Pittsburgh, I've decided that it's time for me to move on from Pitt Hockey. Look forward to seeing what's next for club hockey and keep up the great content." Jess was so, so talented and brought a wealth of quality content to Pitt. She will certainly be missed around the club hockey landscape.
Before we move on to the next one, Jess, I know you're around the Philly area. We need a social manager at Villanova, so hit me up if you want to take over my role, because I'm struggling trying to figure out who's going to take that over. Anyways, we got some great news coming out of Northern Ontario with Sioux College. Great article coming from CTV News about the success that they have had and how it's impact girls hockey in that area. So what they've done, you know, not only with the community, but what their success has done to inspire young girls in the Northern Ontario area has been great. Talking about how the team has become mentors and how they've helped out all girls Timbits hockey. Someone said, "It definitely makes me want to play more. It makes me feel more comfortable seeing how they do things. Just helps me learn all the skills they do." Big shout out to the Sioux up in Canada.
One last stick tap before we move on to our next section, and that's going to be for freshman Charlie Emmy, believe I'm pronouncing that correctly, for setting the goal scoring record and season point leader as a freshman at Concordia University of Wisconsin. 51 goals, 35 assists for 86 points in 30 games. That is rookie mode numbers right there from Charlie Emmy. Stellar season from him. They are always a contender at the M2 level, and it'll be interesting to see if they can go the distance in this coming season. That brings us to the Ham Arena hot seat. Feels weird for Murph to be not doing the Ham Arena hot seat. You know, it's kind of his segment and everything. But I want to put the spotlight on Brigham Young University for this week, because they killed off a 30-year hockey legacy in Provo for what? For what? And now there's an NHL team right in their backyard. It would have been an easy slam dunk for the university, and I cannot believe that they just shut down that program. Still, we really don't know why. There's never been a public reason given other than the university just kind of turned around and was like Andy from Toy Story and was like, "I don't want to play with you anymore." It still makes no sense to me, you know?
Just the videos, the atmosphere they had in Provo was nuts. I mean, it's across the board for ACHA hockey in Utah. All of these teams have just such great crowds, especially Weber State. Weber State is insane. BYU somehow topped that. It was nuts. It reminded me a lot of like the Kentucky atmosphere. I wouldn't say it was as rowdy. It's a travesty that we're missing this program still. I don't know why hockey was cut. It just makes no sense.
When you're talking about great crowds in Utah, you can't forget about Utah State in that mix as well. It's something that I forgot to mention as we were talking about geographic teams, but they are also a team that will consistently pack the house. This week's interview is presented by, as always, OptimX Sports. OptimX Sports provides teams the opportunity to build and manage their own website. And the best part, these guys know club hockey. Be sure to check them out using the link in our bio. And if you're interested in signing up, be sure to use our referral code at optimxsports.com/signup/hockeyhousepod. This week's guest from the University of Florida Gators, AAU D2 national champion, Connor Nicholson. We're going to turn it over to Murph and Connor now.
We're pleased to be joined by the captain of the 2024 AAU College Hockey Division II National Champions from the University of Florida Gators, number 20, Connor Nicholson. Connor, pleasure to have you on the Hockey House Pod.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to be here today and talk about some stories over these past few years on the team.
Oh, it is crazy what you've been through. And it's funny, we had the guys from South Carolina on a couple weeks ago, and then we had the guys from Indiana on. And it's crazy to me is looking at these teams that win the national championship. And I think a lot of people think like, oh, wow, they must have been good for a couple years before, you know, they ended up winning it. Like, it's not like the NHL. Like, you don't have a couple of years to, you know, get after it. It takes a long time of building the program up to the point, and you've seen that come to fruition with Florida.
That's especially true in our scenario, where a couple of years ago a winning record would have been a luxury for us. My first couple of years on the team were losing seasons, and then I guess probably our first positive season would have been last year, and then kind of use that momentum to carry on, and here we are today.
What have the last couple of weeks been like for you guys? I saw that, you know, you're doing merchandise sales, selling like national championship shirts and hats, and I saw you were doing like autograph signings at the Orlando Solar Bears. What has it been like coordinating all these events?
Yeah, it's been special. Matthew Berkeljacek is now the club president. I was the club president the past few years before this year, but being able to be a part of all the different events has been awesome. I mean, it's really been a hectic month, and you would think that maybe we'll get an event here to celebrate and then that's kind of the end of it. But we keep having that last celebration just keep coming up. And so you have that one last celebration of the year, and then you have the next one come up the next week. And so it's really been a crazy past few weeks, and I imagine we might have just had our last one last week, but you never really know. And so, but yeah, there's been a lot of fun ones. Probably the most special one when we went to a steakhouse in Gainesville called Spurrier's. That was pretty much the main event we had with everyone together, where all the coaches came in from Jacksonville, or almost all the players were able to be there for it. And then we had a few special guests show up. One of them being the president of our university, Ben Sass, who is a former U.S. senator. We also had a UF football legend, Steve Spurrier, come by too. And so having both of them come by to give a speech and take a picture and say hi to everyone was really made the night a whole lot more special. And then just being able to celebrate with the trophies through all that was just a crazy night. But yeah, we've been blessed these past month.
It's got to be pretty crazy, like all of the van rides you've done to Jacksonville over the years. And you're like, wow, like it was actually worth it.
Yeah, you often wonder that while you're making that hour 15 drive on a weeknight late at night to practice. A lot of your friends outside of the hockey team are probably doing what other college kids do, and so this definitely made it all worth it in the end.
And now you grew up in Florida, correct?
Yeah, so I was born in St. Louis but moved to Sarasota, Florida when I was 8 years old. I just grew up playing for a travel team, kind of just played single A or double A hockey for the most part, and then ended up deciding to come to UF after that, after playing my U18 year. And so that was pretty much my path here, which is a little different than a lot of the other teams you're seeing these days.
And now, did you grow up a Panthers fan or a Lightning fan, or did you take the St. Louis, you know, portion of your childhood with you to Florida and become a Blues fan?
Yeah, I'd like to say I took a little bit of the history, and also took some of my being growing up in Sarasota, which is right next to Tampa. I'd like to say I followed both of them, and it's easy to do that with some of the years they've been having.
You know, every state is different, whether they have the travel teams, but I think high school hockey in Florida is pretty unique, right? Because you're getting, it's not necessarily each high school having their teams. I saw pictures online that you guys get to play at, you know, the Lightning Arena, and you're doing tournaments there. Like, what does that look like? Is it more of like you play for your club team or AAA team, and then like high school is on the side and every once in a while? Like, what is that process like?
in Florida, it's definitely a lot different than school than areas up north. So I guess the main thing growing up is you'll play for your travel team, which will be either some type of single A or double A. Now it's more coming about more with the Alliance program, and they're a triple A team based out of here. And so growing up, it kind of became a thing in our older years, and some people would play it and others would just opt for double A. Now it's actually become a huge thing where you're seeing guys come out of that program and go to some major D1 programs and whatnot from that Florida Alliance system. So it's definitely grown a lot and has become like an option for a lot of kids going through the system in Florida. But on the high school hockey side of things, that's way different from up north, where a high school up north probably has one team for their high school or a varsity team for that. Whereas down here, we don't quite have the numbers for that. And so a couple high schools will merge together and basically make one team in a given county. Because of that, you're playing with a couple different schools, so you're not really represent, there's not as much of a school tradition that you're really playing towards. And so yeah, the Lightning have actually taken a huge interest in it and tried to grow that as much as possible. And so they have a league, high school hockey league, the Lightning LHSHL is the league they run, where they basically have all these high schools compete in a tournament, and then the championship's always played at Amalie Arena. In the end, you'll play at states against the Southern Florida teams that basically are ran by the Panthers. Winner of that will then go play at Nationals, which fortunately my team, my high school hockey team, had a couple good years, and we were able to go there to Nationals twice. One year we got third, but never won at all. So being able to do that this year when I came to Florida was something that was always felt like we were right there for, but this year was the year we were finally able to do it.
And so growing up in Florida and, you know, figuring out how high school hockey works, how travel hockey works, I imagine that you knew what club hockey was probably a little bit sooner than most people do because of, you know, how popular it is at those universities down south.
I definitely was introduced to it earlier because of my brother who had come to the school in 2013. I got to watch him for that 5-year span during his period. And then as soon as he graduated, I basically came in that a year after that. And then it was cool to be able to see kind of where it was when he played, to where it was when I first started, to where it is now. It's just completely different program and completely different league that we've been playing in. So
you're part of a select club of guys in College Hockey South. You were at Florida for 5 years, you played 4 seasons, and you played in 3 leagues. You started in the ACHA, the conference moves over to the CHF, and the CHF becomes AAU. What do you remember from your first freshman season in the ACHA? Was there a welcome to the ACHA moment? And I'm guessing there was a pretty high chance it took place on one of those van trips to Jacksonville.
Yeah, that was a very interesting year getting thrown into it. It's kind of crazy to look back on and talk with some of the newer guys coming in about how different it is. And I don't think they can fully understand it, because something crazy I like to explain to them is like, when we're going to 8-hour trips far away to South Carolina or whatnot, we wouldn't be doing that in buses, and we wouldn't be staying in hotels either. We traveled very budget friendly, and we'd be driving up in minivans and cars going these 8-hour distances. And then when you get there, it's not like you're welcome to sharing a bed with someone. That wasn't what you were going to be doing. You were sleeping, if especially being a rookie, you're in a tough sleeping arrangement at an Airbnb. I guess back then, welcome to the ACHA moment would probably be on one of those trips going up to South Carolina. We played them on a football weekend, so that's always, you already have that going for you, where we play them Friday, Sunday, football play Saturday. We drive up, you get picked up in a minivan, drive 8 hours, split the ride with the other people you're crammed in the car with, and then we show up to this Airbnb with probably 3 bedrooms. I knew like, all right, I'm definitely not getting a bed. A rookie on the team here. Fortunately, the guys brought a bunch of air mattresses. I found one blown up in the closet of a bedroom, and I thought, all right, this will do. Basically, my mattress was like halfway going up the wall and like halfway on the floor. So I was like sleeping slanted that whole weekend. And then we go in to play South Carolina in a packed barn, and I didn't realize what I was going into. I mean, the guys kind of talk about what type of atmosphere it is there, and I guess you don't really know what to expect until you actually get there. And I walked into the lobby to like grab, I don't know, some tape or something. I don't really know why I walked out there, and it was just filled with kids, and they were just yelling obscenities at you, and it was just an insane atmosphere to play in. So that would probably be the welcome to the league there.
You were fortunate enough too, because I think they're following the fire code these days. I think pre-COVID they were probably letting in maybe 300-400 more people than they should have.
It was a little bit different back then for sure. There was way too many people in there, but it made it fun for sure.
That's where we got to meet you for the first time too, is not down in South Carolina, but another rink that it was probably way too packed was down in South Daytona when you guys opened the season against Embry-Riddle. That is a crazy place to play. It seems like every year they get up for that opening weekend matchup against you guys. You guys make the trip to Daytona, and I mean, that place was a zoo. I couldn't believe it. I had never been to Daytona before. I'd never been to Embry-Riddle before, and here we are at a hockey game in South Daytona between Florida and Embry-Riddle, and the place is jammed. Is that one of the best environments you've had the chance to play in?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that environment is insane going into that. Embry-Riddle, of course, being that they're, as you guys call them, an airplane school, they don't have very much other sports going on there. Their fans ride really hard for the hockey there. Being an away team to get to travel to that, and you see all their fans tailgating in the parking lot beforehand, and then you go into that game and you're kind of like, the way the rink is set up, your locker rooms are basically under the stands. You don't really know what's out there. I mean, you can hear it and you can feel the place shaking while you're in the locker room, but until you step out on that ice and go out for warmups and look up and see, it's like, it gives you a chill seeing that. It's kind of crazy to be able to play in front of that, and it's a very rowdy crowd there. So yeah, that's probably one of the most insane atmospheres I've been fortunate enough to play in. South Carolina's got a good environment there. I still would have to probably give it to Savannah, just because of the way they take care of you, and playing in a semi-pro arena like that is, it's definitely something special. But don't get me wrong, playing in a, that really has a college feel when you go to places like Embry-Riddle to step in front of that.
I will preach this till the day I die. I think every hockey fan should have the Savannah Classic on their bucket list, because especially a kid like me, you know, I grew up in the Northeast. I've heard about, you know, the Bean Pod and Hockey East and that side of college hockey, but it is a very special event down in Savannah. Now, you had the opportunity to play at it in both iterations, one when it was at the Civic Center downtown, and now you've seen it the last 2 years at Endmarket Arena, the home of the Savannah Ghost Pirates and the ECHL. So two very different atmospheres, but like you mentioned, a very professionally run tournament. What are, you know, the pros of each arena? Some of your favorite memories from the old rink and the new rink?
I guess going back a few years to the Civic Center, as much as it was a pretty older arena, ton of cons, but those cons kind of contribute to the environment you play in. To start, you're getting dressed in basically a bathroom, was what our locker room was at the old Civic Center. And then, but it's just kind of a crazy environment because you're playing at this older arena. The fans, none of them are like level. They're all like basically on above you. And so with how intense the rivalries get when you're playing schools like FSU or UGA, as a Florida player, that's like, there's no rivalry like that. And so when you have all these passionate fans there who are going crazy and feeding into that rivalry and are watching that, it feels a little bit different when you're playing at the Civic Center, because the fans are just on top of you and you're just hearing everything they have to say. When you're at the new arena we play at, it's fantastic and I probably prefer it, but you're definitely treated world class there. I mean, going in there and taking the ice for these morning skates, getting dressed in these huge locker rooms that are very comfy, and it feels like a luxury that you walk into a locker room and it's filled with like Gatorades and waters and Celsius's and whatnot, and they just treat you really professional there. So yeah, I'd have to take the new arena just because you kind of feel like you're playing in the NHL for a couple of days. But don't get me wrong, there's nothing like playing in that old historic feel of the Civic Center.
I love the tradition too before the game that every player gets called out for the starting lineup. I feel like that makes it a little bit more of a spectacle, right? Like all 20 guys, and then you end it with the starters. Like, and then of course you guys have the gator on the ice. You've had the opportunity to handle the gator before the game. Like, was that the most nervous you've been before a game when you had to hold the gator?
I wouldn't say that's the most nervous I was been. Probably more recently in those national championship run got me a little more nervous, but that was a pretty crazy start. I mean, there's literally no hockey game that's probably ever been played where you're bringing a live alligator onto the ice. For us to do that, and for UGA to bring their bulldog Uga, Georgia Tech brings that car out there. I mean, for all these schools to have these different traditions come together for this one insane event, it's pretty special. And yeah, being able to hold that gator as everyone skated by was just a lot more special for everyone for that game. And of course, whenever we bring that gator out, it always seems to be good luck for us.
It was my first time in Savannah. wonderful city, plenty of things to do. You know, you can walk around towards the Civic Center and then, you know, get in the car and you drive to End Market, and downtown area is wonderful. Like, what is that like? You've had the opportunity to win it twice now. Like, what is that like when you get to go out in Savannah after winning the Savannah Classic?
It's insane. When you win it at the Civic Center, you're in the heart of downtown. And so you kind of just pour out of the arena with the trophy. I mean, you've seen the tradition. We've started at one of the areas there. That's been our good luck charm, starting out at the Dueling Pianos. Always start our weekend there, and then we'll always finish it too there. And so when we show up there, we kind of, on that first night, lay the groundwork, let them know what to expect. Hey, like, we're hoping to bring it here, and they're always very ready for us to, they're always cheering for that to happen too, because they know how much excitement we can bring when we bring that trophy in. And so they'll fill it up for us, and then they'll call us out on the stage, and they'll play We Are the Champions. After that, it's just kind of just like go, go, go the whole night. I mean, you go from just one spot to the next. The city kind of, they know what's going on that weekend. And a lot of the people that are in Savannah for that weekend, the odds are they're probably at the tournament and saw what went down. So when they see us coming with the trophy, it's just like, all right, like, let these guys in, bring them in, let's fill this thing up and make sure they're having a good time here. And so you bring that wherever you go, and all the fans kind of gather around, and you just feel like you're in the NHL for that whole time after, and you basically just won the Stanley Cup. And so that's kind of how we feel for the night. And so couple crazy nights we've been able to have when we went back to back champs with it. And then being that it's MLK weekend, we have off on that Monday. And so you kind of go into that night, stay up for most of it, and wake up after a few hours of sleep and just cruise right back to Gainesville. And then the celebration continues as there's a Sunday fun day that we continue to go to with the trophy. And so fortunately we weren't able to do that this year, though. The 2 years before, going back to back, kind of a very similar celebration for each one.
You mentioned, you know, it feels like you won the Stanley Cup. You would know. You were telling me this crazy story that you kind of snuck your way into the Avalanche after party after the cup. Like, how did that all happen?
Yeah, that was an interesting night. Being that I was a Tampa fan, my parents have season tickets, fortunately, so they were able to get an extra ticket for me for that final game against the Avalanche. We were staying at the same hotel as them that night, or most teams will fly home after they win the cup, but the Avalanche decided to have their celebration at Amalie Arena, which is where the Lightning play. Afterwards, they ended up bringing it back to the hotel that we were staying at. My mom and I were just hanging out at the hotel, and it was probably 2 a.m. We were getting ready to call it. I see on Twitter that they're leaving the arena and we're on foot. And so I was thinking, okay, there's a high chance they're bringing it back here because this is where they're staying. So let's just give it a few minutes. So they show up, massive crowd of them, and they're going up or the escalator and riding up there. And we're already on the second floor. And so the security guards kind of stopped anyone from following them up that escalator. But we were already up there. And so they basically just walked right past us. We kind of just jumped in the crowd with them. And their players, I mean, this is 2 a.m. after they had already won the cup. So they didn't really care who they were seeing. They were, Ube Kubel was one of the guys. He like came up to me and like hugged me. He's like, we did it. We did it. And I just kind of like followed in with him. From there, I think they just kind of assumed we were part of their friend group or something. And they just let us roll with it.
Yeah, it's got to be a core memory for sure. And like you mentioned, you guys fell to Georgia in the final, that Savannah Classic this year. An awesome game. And that was by far the best crowd of the weekend. It felt like Georgia always has the support in that tournament, you know, being in their home state. And then felt like a lot of Florida fans made the trip too. So I was really looking forward to that game because I felt like both teams traveled pretty well. And, you know, of course you got Uga and the Gator too on the ice beforehand. So it made for a really cool environment. And I even saw, you know, John Butchergrass was like retweeting it, being like, we need these teams in college hockey, because it had to have been the best environment you've ever played in that championship game.
Yeah, that was insane. It definitely helps that they changed the format. So whereas in past years, every year we play Friday night, UGA, Saturday night, FSU, win or lose. Whereas this year, it was more of a win or go home situation where you have the semifinals on Friday, championship on Saturday. And so everyone knew what was at stake on that Saturday game. There was no what ifs. Yeah, it definitely added that all to all that excitement. But you got that right. There was a crazy showing of UGA fans, being how close to Athens we are and how many people live in that or from around that area that are Georgia fans. And then it was pleasantly surprised to see all the Florida fans that made the trip or came out to see us, and that definitely made it a crazy atmosphere there.
You finish out the season, I think that's like a great way to kick off the second semester, and then, you know, not too far around the corner you have the College Hockey South playoffs, and you guys lost in overtime in the first round to Clemson. In terms of like prepping for the end of the year, and you know, you've had a good run and you already know that you're going to nationals, like what kind of hiccup was that maybe afterwards in the locker room? You lost to a Clemson team that ended up going on a run in the College Hockey South playoffs. But was there any like doubt after that game, or did that kind of fuel the fire?
Yeah, there was a ton of emotions going into that tournament because we kind of knew like, all right, we lost Savannah. That was one of the big ones. We set a ton of goals at the beginning of the year. Going into that game, the College Hockey South playoffs was one of our goals. After that heartbreak in Savannah, it was like, all right, let's get going here. We go in, blow a 3-goal lead to Clemson, and all credit to them. They battled back and had a great group that had a desire to win, and they got the best of us that night. And then after that game, it was the wake-up call we needed. And as much as that was probably the worst night I've had being a part of the group, it was also probably the most beneficial for our group, because I think that's what we needed to go on to win every single game since then. I think after that Clemson loss, we haven't lost a game and went on a 10-game win streak to win the SEC and the Natties. That was a very big wake-up call that was needed in the locker room right after. I know myself and our president, Matthew Burkle-Jasek, gave a speech and said, hey, we've won Savannah a couple of times, but outside of that, we haven't won much. So let's wake up here. If you don't want to be here, stay home. We're going to Natty's to win this. We're not leaving without it. So I think that's a big moment that I don't know if we'd be sitting here today being national champs and SEC champs if we don't have that heartbreaking loss to Clemson.
And it's crazy. Like, this was the year of losing in the conference playoffs, because we talked about at the start of the show, but like South Carolina had a very similar route in Division I AAU. And we just talked to the Indiana guys, you know, they were expected to three-peat in their conference and they lost in the first round. And it was like the wake-up call that you need. And in the moment, I think it's pretty tough because you have such high expectations for your team, but feels like you guys righted the ship right away. You head into AAU Nationals, 7-0 win over Newman, 12-2 win over Anna Maria, 5-0 win over Mass Maritime. You outscore your opponents 24-2. With you playing all new opponents, like how do you prepare for those games? Because, you know, in College Hockey South, like you guys play the teams in your conference, it's very hard to travel to teams outside of the conference. So like, were you expecting to beat those teams by that much? Or was that kind of just like, hey, we're really getting the ball rolling here and we're playing our best hockey?
I think that going into that Clemson game, we were a 3 seed and they were a 6 seed. I think that we let the rankings go to our head. And so when we went to Nationals, we were a 2 seed and our opponent, our first one being a 19 seed. I think that we just kind of let all expectations about what we're going to play just kind of go out the door and just decide like, hey, we know what we have in this room. It's up to us. Going into it, we had our coaches did a great job on getting us prepared about who to watch out for. And by no means were we thinking it was going to be a cakewalk through those 3 games. I mean, of course, the scores did sound a little lopsided, but going into those, we didn't think it was going to be like that, being that a lot of these teams had some really good players that played high-level juniors or even D3 hockey. And so these are going to be some challenging games. And I think the mantra rolling into it was, let's win. We need to win this one because the next one's going to be even harder for these pool play games because you're playing a higher seed each time. As we get into it, we play that 19 seed and our goalie has an insane game with a shutout. I think that instilled so much confidence in the group that we saw how well he played that first game. And then our forwards were able to, I mean, put so much on the board. And then our defense, of course, shutout game for them. I think that game was really what started that confidence and got us going there. And from there, we just kind of took off.
Like I mentioned, you guys went on quite a run and it kind of comes to a screeching halt at the end of the second period against Alabama Huntsville. You guys are playing another College Hockey South team. You're down 4-1 heading into that third period. What is that conversation like in the locker room? You know, had you played them earlier in the regular season? Did you guys know like, hey, we're capable of coming back?
We had never played that team before, Alabama Huntsville, but they had a couple guys with a lot of talent. And we had kind of looking at what they had done in the past, they had definitely beaten some top teams. And so we were definitely not trying to take them lightly. And I think we came out not as well as we would have liked. And their goalie was just having an insane game, playing the game of his life. And we just couldn't get anything by him. And I think once we got that first goal, we kind of knew, all right, things are going to open up and we're going to get the next one and the next one and the next one. And so going down 4-1 in the national championship quarterfinals is not how you want to go into the third period. I know that when we were in the locker room, a couple guys stepped up and said some really powerful things. I know one that comes to mind is our other goalie, Dimitri. He's another veteran on the team, and he gave some insane speech that fired the guys up, and we go out there and the rest is history of that game. But that was the game that after we got through that, we knew for a fact we were winning the national championship. But you're down 4-1 after the second. There's a lot of things going through your head. But to see the boys rally like that, it was special. And another one of those things that maybe we don't make the run we do if you don't go down like that and make that incredible comeback win.
Yeah, because then you guys rolled into the semifinals, and I think this is a game I certainly thought High Point was a team to beat in this tournament, and you guys took it to them 9-3. Was that one of those games where you guys just never took your foot off the gas early on, or was it closer than the score made it seem?
So High Point was an incredible team. They had a lot of talent from a lot of different guys, and to give a little backstory, the night before when we were playing Alabama Huntsville, High Point was, their team was in the stands. As Alabama Huntsville made any special play or something, you heard their entire team giving it to us. And as we came off the ice, they're just giving it to us. For those who don't know, FSU is our rival, so they have this war chant, and High Point's just sitting in the stands doing the FSU Seminole war chant. And so when you see that as your quarterfinal, during your quarterfinal game of the opponent that you're most likely playing tomorrow, and I mean, that's why they knew. I think they rather would have played the other team than getting us, and so it lit a fire in us, and we went into that game knowing, all right, there might be a little fear in their locker room if they don't want to play us, like as we saw yesterday. That was probably the most fired up I've seen our team come out. We were in our locker room and we heard High Point doing the FSU war chant and screaming it as loud as they could and before we even take the ice. And so we were pretty motivated to keep rolling into that game. We knew they didn't want to play us. We were thrilled at the opportunity to play them. We knew they had a couple really notable players in their team. We were confident in our chances, but we didn't expect to have the start we did. We just kind of took off in the first and second. They battled back a little bit in the second, but fortunately we just kept scoring and just kept taking the life out of them. They had their backup goalie in at some point in that game, and just our offense just fueled us through that game. I mean, I'm not sure if you heard about the flu poisoning sickness that we were going through, but I was a culprit the night before, and then, or a few days before, and then we had other guys going through it the day before when during that Alabama Huntsville game. And then I think we were all starting to fully recover during that High Point game, and that's when we had our team fully healthy. And so I think the guys really got going then.
Yeah, I did hear, because at that point we had kind of shifted our coverage over to St. Louis and we're covering the AAU tournament remotely, but I got a text from an inside source. They were like, the flu is going around. There's like, you know, Tennessee's got the flu, Florida's got the flu. And I'm like, no wonder teams have the flu. Like if you walk in the hallways by the locker rooms, you'd think it's like the trenches of World War One. Like influenza is just spreading throughout those locker rooms.
Yeah, it was insane. I think it may have stemmed from something in our hotel. I know Tennessee and Miami, who are also in our hotel, pretty sure I heard Tennessee had about 10 guys get it over the course. Miami had another. I was actually the first to get it. And then after that, a few others got it. And I got it in our third game. We're about to go out. And I just mentioned to my coach, hey, I'm not feeling great. I don't know what's going on, but if I need to go, I'm just going to give you the nod and I'll have to step out because I don't want to hurt the team. We have four lines fully capable of guys. So I'm just going to give you just let you know. And so right before we're going out for puck drop, it hits me and I'm in the bathroom yakking. I run out there, my line's starting. We're about to start the game and I just step on the ice after yakking and then trying to go out there and just very dazed, not really sure where I am after. That team came out really hard and that was not the type of game I was wanting to play in while going through that sickness, but a couple shifts in, hits me again. I have to run out, go throw up. And then I just come back. I'm like, all right, coach, I think I'm good. Just throw me out there. And so my first shift back after just throwing up in the locker room, I come back and score that first shift. Right after that, it's the same thing. And so I was just kind of in and out of the lineup most of that game, just trying to do whatever I could to just motivate the guys and fire the guys up and just try to provide some leadership wherever I could because I was definitely not doing much while I was out there. That was the start of our sickness, and a few other notable guys that we would have loved to have got it as well in those next few games. But fortunately, we recovered in time for the semis and for the finals.
And back to that High Point, them doing the Seminole War chant, I don't think you would have had that if High Point had a football team. I don't think those guys understand the power of college football, right? Like, you can't be throwing that around when you're playing the Gators.
Oh, yeah. Especially this year. I mean, football team's not been doing as well as they would have liked, and they hit a personal spot.
You head into that national championship game, and you're playing FAU, who seemed like the clear front runner. You guys right behind them. You guys had a terrific series down in their home rink. And I remember watching that one on YouTube. You guys got one, they got one, and you split the weekend series. You know, they keep their number one ranking. You guys seem to be the two teams at the top all year long. It's only fitting that you met in the national championship game, especially considering neither team made it very far in the College Hockey South playoffs. So you got the two best teams on the ice. What was the mindset heading into that game, you know, having had played them earlier in the semester?
We both had an insane chip on our shoulder. I know our coach going into that first weekend series, he had a great plan for how we were going to go about all these games, because in his mind and all of our minds, we saw it being, we're probably going to play this team four times this season. And that was basically what our coach relayed to us. And two of them being that weekend, one of them most likely being in the College Hockey South playoffs, and then that last time being the national championship finals. He was certainly right about that national championship finals one, and the master plan seemed to work. But going into that first weekend, we really didn't know what to expect. I mean, we had seen how well they were doing, but and we had played a lot of their guys before. And so we kind of knew the team they had, but we just didn't know what it was going to look like. And I think that first night, it was a Friday night or for that first regular season game, and they had some type of jersey giveaway night. And so the place was packed like I had never seen it, where the entire bleachers filled up, all around the ice wrapped around was body to body with a couple people back. That was the most insane I had seen FAU's environment packed because of that crazy fan base they had. I think that was a big emotional win for us, being that we were able to beat them 4-1 in that first game. And our goalie Connor Lee had an incredible night that night against them, and they had their starter in too. I think that was the big turning point for us, knowing that, hey, we just beat the number one team in our league, we can beat anyone. Being that we won that first game, I think that it just filled us with confidence. And so going into that championship game, our mantra in that High Point game was, hey, we know who we're playing tomorrow. Between FAU and Tennessee, FAU had just won, so we knew what we were going to be going up against. Let's get through this game, and we're going to be national championships, because we know what we had seen when we played FAU that first time. And although they were an incredible team, had from top to bottom, their talent was insane. I think that the amount of compete our team was willing to bring and how much we wanted it going into that, we weren't losing that game.
Was there a moment on the bench in the third period where you knew you guys had it, you know, having that confidence before the game that you knew you could beat that team, but you guys end up winning 8-4, you outshoot them 39-19. At what point in the third period did you kind of like take a deep breath and relax?
Yeah, so our team came out hot that game. I think what fueled us again, our high-powered offense. I think we averaged about 7 goals a game during that national championship run. Sure enough, they were on again that game to start us off. And so we came off with, like, I think we started a 3-0 lead. The game kind of went, we were scoring, they were scoring through the remainder of the game. And I think at a certain point in the third, it was 5-4. Guys, some of the guys may have admitted that they were a little scared at that moment, but I know that we just kept going. And when it was 5-4, fortunately, we had a ton of lines that can just score at will. Our first line went out there and scored. And once it was 6-4, you had that little extra breathing room again, and then finally made it 7-4. And then you're thinking, all right, 10 minutes to go in the third, 7-4 lead. You never really know at that moment, though. So you're still kind of going and just doing whatever you can. We scored that empty netter 8-4. And I think that's when it finally hit that, hey, we're going to be national champions in a few minutes here.
Now, I got to ask, because you've mentioned the coaching staff a couple of times now, and I had the opportunity to introduce myself when we first met them down in Daytona, and I didn't realize they were new, right? Like, I went up and introduced myself, and I think a funny moment was, like, I very quickly found out, like, they had no idea what the Hockey House podcast was and all that stuff, and I was like, oh, like, you know, I'll cut them some slack. They're new guys here, and I imagine in your role with the team that you had, you know, a lot of say in bringing those guys on. And, you know, did you ever think during the interview process or the hiring process that those guys were going to be able to get it done for you? Because you mentioned, you know, you've seen Florida hockey, you know, transform over the last couple of years. Did they seem like the guys for the job?
We had been introduced to Coach Frank Pasquale, our head coach now, a couple of years ago. And We saw a lot of potential based given his experience coaching some high level. Also, some of these different ideas that he brought to the table that we had really never thought about before. We hadn't really been happy with what has happened so far with our team. And we just thought that there's so much more that we can do with this group of guys we have. When we first brought him in this year to take over as head coach, he had two of his friends that he met playing men's league, and those were our assistant coaches. So we call him Coach, one of them our defensive coach, Coach Tank, and then our offensive coach, Coach Paramuha. These guys both came in with a unique set of experiences, and they were all actually, it was Coach Frank Pasquale, our head coach's idea to bring both of those in, and we gave him the green light, trusted in him, and then hearing all the ideas that they all kind of put on the table for us that we had no idea about, that they just put in our heads that, hey, like, this is actually something we've never done before, but this is going to make us a better team. Let's just put it into practice. And so as the year went on, we started to give them more. We trusted them more and more in everything they did. There was just a whole lot more trust to them. And at the point we are at now, it's hard to say there wasn't a plan for anything they did, but they did an incredible job being that it was their first year to be able to bring the group from where we were at in the past to where we are now. We owe those guys a ton of credit for all the dedication they put in to our team just to make us the best. They all have families. For them to sacrifice so much time to really take so much care about each and every player in our team and also the team as a whole was really special, and we owe them a lot. I'm glad that they could also be rewarded in their first year winning that national championship and SEC championship.
And it was so awesome too in Savannah. I think it was Coach Pasquale's son was out in the full track suit, you know, doing the morning skate with you guys, and it was just awesome to see, you know, like you mentioned, like especially at the club level, it's a lot of hours, a lot of thankless hours. And, you know, these guys do, you know, they have families. And so for him to put in that time, I'm sure the boys appreciated it.
Oh, yeah. He's been a part of our group, no doubt, from day one. And same thing with his son. Like you mentioned, Dominic was out there skating around in the tracksuit. He's been a part of the group, too. And it's been a pleasure having those guys around and helping us get to where we are today.
After the championship, we talked about all the celebration stuff. Like, you guys knew in advance that there was going to be one more tournament at the end of the year, the return of the SECHL tourney. College Hockey South used to be the SECHL. Maybe some trademark issues. They had to change the name of the conference, but they brought back the tournament and they got all the SEC schools together for one last hurrah to end the season. What was that like preparing for that? Did you guys practice between the national championship and that tournament? And, you know, how was the competition level when you got to Alabama?
It was a very interesting timeline of events, but the SEC, being that there's so much tradition in the South, so much history and all that, and the rivalries, our Commissioner Kyle wanted to bring back that SEC tradition. All the guys were super excited for. The sequence of events, though, was a little odd, being that we had just won a national championship and then we're going to have to get up and play in a week for the SEC championship. After that national championship, there wasn't much practice or anything going down to get ready for that. Yeah, it was definitely hard to get motivated to go out for that. But I know we were playing, being that we played in D2 this year, we were going up against what ended up being three D1 opponents all throughout that to win it. I know that added a little motivation factor, especially playing in that championship game against South Carolina, who had just won the D1 national championship. I'd say that was probably the biggest motivator is, hey, we're playing the D1 national champs and we have the chance to win the SEC championship as a result. So I think that was just the biggest thing that kind of fueled us, being that we had the chance for the first time in history to win the SEC, which we had never done before. So it was definitely special to be able to pull that off.
There's two people I want to ask you about. The first is College Hockey South Commissioner Kyle Nell. He's a huge supporter of what we do. I've learned over the last 2 years at AAU Nationals, it seems like all the players really enjoy the work that he puts forward. You know, being that he played at Tennessee when he was in college, he understands, you know, the club hockey side of things a little bit more than maybe some other commissioners do who maybe have a different hockey background and then get into that role. Like, what are some things that he does that you really appreciate as a player?
Kyle's been awesome for the league. When I first came into the league, I'm not even sure if he was involved at that point because I was with Sarge back then, who was doing a great job, and then kind of passed it on to Kyle to take over. Kyle's been incredible. I can't understand how he's able to put in so much time and effort into all he does on top of his job and family and whatnot. It's really amazes me how he was able to, when I was working as president with him, anything I needed help with, he was always there for me and able to just give me an answer for and give advice on. And so seeing how much he's really grown the league and changed it, coming from where there was only one team basically at every school, especially us being included in that. We just had an ACHA D3 a few years ago, whereas now we have an AAU D2 team potentially climbing to D1 next season, as well as a D3 team. Seeing how many other teams in the league have been able to do that as well. Really crazy how he's able to build up so many teams so quickly, as well as that women's division. But what's even more crazy about it all is how much growth and attention there has been around it. I know that from a talent wise, and also a media and fan wise as well, we got to attribute a lot of that to him. I know talent wise, you have so many players coming from juniors and other college programs transferring to some of these schools. And then it's only making the competition grow that much more and make the product on the ice that much better. But then also you have so many notable people really tuned in for these games. I know after we won nationals, I would never have thought it'd be broadcasted on the Tampa Bay Lightning game at intermission, how the Florida Gators had just won nationals. I would have never thought that they would have picked up something like that. But you see different stuff like that just happen. We really owe him a big thank you because he's definitely grown this league a lot and made this league a ton of fun for all the guys that have been able to play this while going to school. And so
you mentioned the guy who has laid the groundwork for Kyle to do what he does. And I know he was joking it at AAU Nationals that it seems like he's been talking to someone in the Nicholson family for the last 10 years, but that would be Sarge and the stuff that he has done. I don't need you to tell me how much Sarge has done for, you know, the AAU game, but if we were to ever add someone new to the podcast, I think he would be a great addition because of the stories he has. Like, what's your favorite Sarge memory looking back on your career at Florida?
Yeah, you got to have a lot of memories of Sarge. He was the main point of contact back then as the commissioner. And so every time I would go and connect with him, he'd have a bunch of stories about former UF players. I'd have to say the favorite story that he tells me, probably the Savannah Classic story where, so he used to be, for backstory, he was the coach of Georgia Tech. As Georgia Tech was part of the Savannah Classic, I'm not sure if it's how exactly it started, but whenever the team that lost the Savannah Classic got second, they would take that second place trophy and just launch it off the bridge that you have to go over to get into Savannah. And so that was a big running tradition for a lot of years. I think they did away with the second place trophy now, which was a smart move. That's got to be one of the favorite stories that Sarge told me about.
I think that's also part of, you know, the new format, right? Like, I think everyone loves the playoff format better, where it's the semifinals and the championship. So, you know, you don't have a team winning their second game and then being upset that they didn't win the tournament and throwing it off the bridge. So that's been great as well. But you do mention the media coverage around College Hockey South has certainly grown the game a ton. Your media staff does a terrific job. I want to give a shout out to Anna Carrington because her photos are fantastic. The media has obviously grown in the time that you've been at Florida. Like, what has maybe been your favorite thing that the media team has done to up the team's, you know, online presence?
Or when I first started here, the media presence was very small compared to what it is now. We had one intern who was our social media intern, and he kind of just ran it all. We kind of took some inspiration from some of the D1 teams and kind of saw what they have and thought there's no reason we can't have the same presence. And so we got in contact with the J school, found a master list of students in the journalism school here. We sent a mass email basically saying, hey, if you're looking for an internship with the UF hockey team, here's our available positions, and just outlined 10 plus openings that we had never had before. We went from having one intern to now having a whole media team with 10 plus people on it. We had all these great applicants apply. Anna Carrington, huge shout out to her. She's made it grow at an insane rate and something I had never imagined could have happened while I was here. And so being that she had so much experience working so many D1 teams, and also now, of course, professional baseball teams as well, she brought this insane experience to us and really showed us and showed our other interns what is possible and how to go about it all. And so she really transformed what social media looks like for our team. And I mean, as you've seen the following, our social medias have more followers than a lot of the D1 teams here at UF, which is just mind-boggling, something we never would have thought before as a freshman that was going to happen one day. Yeah, I'd say there's a ton of different things that we got to love that the media team does. I think my favorite is some of the different highlight reel videos that they'll make after some weekend series or some different game. It's kind of crazy to be able to just after a few days after the game, just see one of these sick videos pop out and just see all these insane like hits or goals or whatnot just captured so perfectly like they do. And so we got to give them a lot of credit because they've been a huge reason why we've been able to grow so much. And it's been a big factor on helping us recruit some new talent into our team.
Yeah, it has been insane to watch. And got to meet Anna down in Savannah. And it was crazy too, like fighting for elbow room with some of these other media teams in Savannah so I can get my camera in there and get some content. And you know, there's three UF video girls all getting footage and they're making the sick hype videos at the end of the day. But final question for you, and I do have to hold it up because you were one of the first people to send us a jersey. You asked for my name and number and I did Tebow 15 because I figured if I'm going to have a Florida jersey, that would be the best looking one. And the only reason I didn't wear it is because, as you can imagine, my jersey collection is pretty big these days. And everyone, you know, my siblings are always asking me to borrow jerseys for different events. So it's got some coffee stains on the front of that. So we're going to have to take care of that. But you've worn a bunch of different jerseys in your time at UF. I want your top three. So going in order from 3 to 1, what are your favorite jerseys that you've worn as a Florida Gator?
All right. Going from 3 to 1, the third favorite jersey we've had, I would say my junior year, we wore these orange gator skin jerseys. What we were trying to mimic was kind of like an alligator skin. And so we made them orange, which I hadn't had orange jerseys in my time here yet. So those would probably be my third favorite. My number two favorite would be just the clean black away jerseys we wear, basically all black with that gator checkered pattern at the bottom, just basically that UF Gatorhead logo. Coming in at number one, my favorite is definitely these throwback jerseys we've had, which it's a blue jersey with the original Fighting Gator logo with a hockey stick in his hand from when our first season started with the club, and probably nearly 30 years ago now, that was the original logo they used. And so we wanted to introduce some type of third jersey throwback edition jerseys. And so we use that old gator head, and those are by far my favorite.
You guys have quite the collection too. And you didn't even rattle off the full gator skin one that you guys did too, which was unreal at Savannah 2 years ago. And that's got to be honorable mention. But I did notice too, like you talk about how far the club has come. I actually remember it wasn't too long ago where we would get highlights sent to us. And it's like, man, we can't post this. Like the UF goalie's like not even wearing the same color jersey, or like that kid's not even wearing the right socks, and that kid's wearing a practice jersey. And like here you guys are a year later, you got some of the best threads in the game, and you're certainly looking the part. I do have one caveat. I gotta call him out. Is Keegan Lampinen just so good that he doesn't need a blue helmet, and no one's gonna tell him to ditch the black one?
Yeah, Keegan's been a great addition, but I think he has some color issues because we remind him that he should get a blue helmet and he always responds, oh, it is blue, even though it's clearly not matching the rest of them. So yeah, he might need to hear that from you to get some change with that. But
I wasn't gonna bust his balls about it when we saw him to open the season in Daytona, because I'm like, you know what, he's probably a freshman, he's probably, you know, hockey monkey, takes a couple weeks to get the stuff in. But when I saw him at Nationals, I'm like, dude, what are you doing, man? It's been way too long. So maybe this offseason we can hook him up with a blue helmet, or get him a promo code somewhere for a nice new Bauer bucket.
Yeah, he definitely needs one.
Connor, is there anything we missed? I mean, are you guys still doing some national championship merch? Should we plug that before you go?
So I think our merch actually finished up. We had some merchandise t-shirts going out, and then some nice hats and jerseys as well. I think that the merchandise may have finished up for now. However, I think we ordered an excess to one day open it up again or sell it at some in-person games. So once that's finished, it's going to be finished. So that's going to be very limited amounts. So once that does get released in the future, just definitely be ready to place your order for those, because we got a lot of cool stuff that came out.
Yeah, I do have to say my younger sister made the trip with me to Savannah, and we hit the merch tables to bring home some stuff for the fam. And so the gator gear was the most popular. I think her and my brother ended up with like Lululemon merch, because I think that's what you guys were selling in Savannah. So plenty of Murphy family members decked out in gator stuff too. So I want to make sure anyone listening can go and support the boys too, because what a journey you guys have been on the last couple of years.
Oh yeah, that's fantastic. Love to hear you supporting all that.
Yeah, of course. Well, hey, Connor, thanks again for taking the time to talk with us. Honestly, great recapping what you've been through. And I'm sure, you know, we could probably do a part two, because there's a bunch of stories that we didn't even cover. So thanks again for joining us, and, you know, best of luck in your future endeavors.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, man. We love to see what you're doing for the game. You're growing the game of hockey, especially for us. So thank you very much for all that and for having me today.
Thanks to Connor for coming on this week. Really appreciate him spending the time with Murph. We've got some early call your shots. I did not expect to see this. Like, sometimes we put out the call your shots, and I think we've gotten to a point now with the platform where people are acutely aware of sometimes the consequences that come with calling your shot. But Chuck Al Four, the Khan College ACHA M2 head coach, gave me a quote that said, "Connecticut College 2025, ACHA M2 national champs. People better get us now. That's all. You better get us now because it's coming." Quote Dan Hurley, quote Khan College. He followed up and said, "We're returning almost everyone. Not going to take anyone by surprise next year. They know the Camels are coming." This was a Humps program that was one win away from nationals last year. They had a 4-3 win over RPI in the regular season and then a 12-7 win in regionals, ultimately falling to New Hampshire. Really, really interesting team to watch out of the Northeast in ACHA M2. Love the confidence this early in the season.
Yeah, love the confidence. I don't want to like discredit them, and I might eat my foot next year if they really go deep. I just think it's hard with NESCAC schools. Like, these schools have 2,000 kids. You get what you get. Interesting to hear. I'd like to see them go deep and see an academic school make a run.
And then friend of the program, Graham Tuck from High Point AAU, said, "Word on the street is that High Point did some transfer recruiting at the AAU All-Star Showcase. This was a team that definitely impressed last season. We'll see what happens with the Panthers in this upcoming season."
Bonkers to hear the words AAU college hockey, or even ACHA too, along next to the word transfer recruiting. That's nuts to me, but I don't know.
Whole new world in club hockey. That takes us to the question of the week. We mentioned them earlier with the Utah hockey team. What is your pick for what the new Utah hockey team should be named? There have been a couple of names floating around with some trademarks being filed. We had some suggestions from Murph and Fitz. Murph gave the one that is seemingly kind of in the lead right now and has kind of been adopted by the Utah community, which is the Yetis. Fitz went with the Gila Monsters, which is the state animal of Utah. They are scary as hell. Collins, what are you going with?
I'm thinking stick with their current naming convention for their NBA team, music genres that have no relation to the state. So I'm thinking the Utah ska punk, Utah Garage House. There should be some greater level of depth and really looking into some of Utah's history. What, they're the Beehive State or something like that. So there's probably some cool ties with there, maybe like Utah Yellow Jackets or something like that. Mammoth and Outlaws. You already have the Colorado Mammoth in the NLL, and then you also have the Denver Outlaws in the PLL. So it's just a little too similar, and then also a little too close geographically.
I think Yellow Jackets does kind of roll off the tongue. I will forever and always associate that with Georgia Tech. So I don't see another team kind of taking that moniker. Partial to Yeti, singular, because I want to add on to the trivia question of NHL teams that don't end in S. I'm putting you on the spot, Collins. Name all of them.
All NHL teams, what, there's five, right? Four? Okay. So you have the Wild. I love these trivia games so much. If you asked me like 2 hours ago when I was a little bit more fresh, this might have been easier. Can I get not?
No.
No conferences, no divisions. Lightning. So Wild, Lightning, missing two.
This is going to be so bad for you to edit.
No hints. Yeah, you're not giving me hints here. Kraken. All right, I'm missing one here. I'm trying as hard as I can. Who am I missing? I've named a good majority. Eastern U.S. or Western U.S.?
Western.
I'm going to run through the West Coast. So Sharks. Is it Golden Knights? No.
That ends with an S.
No, I know, but I didn't know if it was like Golden. I don't know if they.
Are you giving up?
No, I'm not a quitter. I'm just running through just the West Coast here. Kraken, Knights, Sharks, Kings, Ducks. Oh, fuck. Avalanche.
There it is. Congratulations to Aiden, yeah. Collins. That took, I think, 6 minutes and will probably be condensed to 30 seconds. Proud of you, buddy.
You watch the video on TikTok and you nail it. As soon as you're asked it out of the blue, way harder. Just saying.
Exponentially harder. I'm not going to disagree with you on that one. And with that, we are going to wrap up another week here on the Hockey House Podcast. Thank you so much for following along. Thank you so much for submitting your content. We want to keep in touch with how you're doing over the off season. Send us all your commitments. Send us your training camps. Send us you on the golf course. We want to see it all. Make sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. We are always so, so grateful for your support. We'll see you next week, boys.
See you, boys.